plan was we would have a series of lectures on the same topics in six items that destroy bhakti, the six items that nourish bhakti, according to Rupa Goswami, nectar of instruction. Well, we completed two of them, but my computer won't start. It has its own problems, I'll tell you. But for the evening class, we have a couple, few other options, so many other options. One option is just continue from the morning class, Srimad Bhagavatam. Another is a verse from Bhagavad Gita. Another is, I'll just pick a topic off the shelf.
Which make the devotee perfect in self-realization.
so that his only desire is to achieve the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a devotee undoubtedly approaches the Lord without difficulty. This is called yoga. By the mercy of the Lord, such a devotee never comes back to this material condition of life. Kshema. K-S-E-M-A. Kshema refers to the merciful protection of the Lord. The Lord helps the devotee to achieve Krishna consciousness by yoga, and when he becomes fully Krishna conscious, the Lord protects him from falling down to a miserable condition of life. So in the verse there's two requirements from our side and two things that Krishna does from his side. But the requirements from our side is exclusive devotion, ananya. Anya means other, and ananya is the opposite. No other, exclusive. Ananya bhak. Where do we know that verse from Bhagavad Gita, ananya bhak? Where does that phrase come? Vajate maam ananya bhak sadhu eva samantavya. Correct? What's the verse? Oh, Bhagavad Gita scholars. It's 933 Bhagavad Gita. And 933 Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, Apichet sudaracharo vajate maam ananyabha sadoreva samantavya. So, even if api chet is one of those phrases that it's like what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur calls working hypothesis. If the sun didn't come up one day, what would happen? Well, it's useless to talk about what would happen if the sun won't come up one day, because the sun comes up every day. Well, just for argument's sake, what would happen if something that will never happen happens? So that's what apichet means. So apichet sudur achar. What is achar? I understand. I don't know what sannyasa. Priya Padanga, now Swami, has came back here and gave the bhakti sadachar. Yes? Seminar? And what is, so what does achar mean? What does sadachar mean?
Behavior.
Hello? I'm trying to get a little audience participation. Behavior, achar. So bhakti sadachar is Vaishnava etiquette. How a bhakta behaves. And there's sadachar and there's durachar. Achar is behavior. Sadachar is good behavior. Durachar is bad behavior. And sudurachar means very bad behavior. Even if a devotee does sudurachar, very bad. They won't. But even if they did, just supposing they did, like the sun didn't come up one morning. Supposing some devotee does some really bad behavior. Sadur eva. Sa. Mantavya. Sa is a pronoun. He. I consider that person sadhu. Mantavya. That's Krishna's mind. In Krishna's mind, he considers him sadhu. Really? he does really bad behavior. Sadhu, why? Sadhu Reva Sabantavya. If he's Bhajate Mam Ananya Bhav. Ananya, undivided devotion. Prabhupada gives the example, the tide comes, it's high tide and it's low tide, and it's high tide and it's low tide. It only goes so far at high tide. It only goes out so far at low tide. And it's the same thing with each passing of the moon. The phases of the moon sometimes become a little bit bigger. High tide, low tide, or the apogee and perigee, you know that one. This Gaur Purnima was a very unique Gaur Purnima in the past 20 years because the moon, this is a science class, the moon moves in a, not in a complete circle, it moves in an elliptical pattern, and there are times when the moon is further away for the full moon, or sometimes when it's very close, perigee. It's very close, and apogee is very so. This recent Gaur Purnima, one that just passed, every 20 years, it's as close. It's like thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of miles closer to the Earth. So the tide might move a little bit, but it's basically up and down. But supposing, like it just happened in Japan, a fall. And the earth, the big shifting of layers of the earth, and a tsunami comes, or a tidal wave comes. It doesn't matter where the tide stops. It just keeps coming and coming and coming and coming. But after it recedes, it goes back to the way it was. So Prabhupada likened a tidal wave to a devotee engaging in sudurachar. It's circumstantial, not intentional. They don't think, oh, I'm a devotee, I can get away with one or two bad ones in my lifetime. Here it is, boom. Not something intentional, but something that's just circumstantial. I heard one class really early in the movement, this wouldn't apply so much today, but because once Prabhupada was speaking early in the Hare Krishna movement in New York, the people he was speaking to had very bad habits. So he didn't speak to LSD, he was smoking cigarettes. So supposing somebody, they become a devotee and they stopped all their bad habits, but they're in the company of some people that are smoking, or some old friends that are smoking, and they smoke. So this is, Prabhupada gave this as an example. It's circumstantial. We didn't go into that association and think, hey, I can get away with smoking. But the important, it's two important things. One is, it's circumstantial, and the other is, immediately, as soon as the circumstances are over, that devotee returns to their rightful position. Immediately. Some overwhelming circumstance, some incredible pressure, and some bad behavior. But as soon as that circumstance is over, immediately they're back. Because it's their nature. Ananya bhav. Undivided devotion. To such a person who has undivided devotion, even if circumstantially something bad happens, that person is a sadhu. In the next verse, Krishna says that he restores their position. Kshipram bhavati karmatma. Krishna personally intervenes. Like Lord Brahma is an example. He's the head of our sampradaya, so we have to be very careful here. But he stole the cowherd boys and the calves. That was very bad. It wasn't like, you know, it was a kidnap program, he wanted to ransom and get some money, like a pirate or something. But he was examining, what's the limit of Krishna's mystic powers? Because he had just seen the Adasura demon killed by Krishna in a very amazing way. He entered right into the mouth of the Agasura Pima and closed his mouth. Krishna got bigger. Mahima Siddhi. He became so big. Couldn't breathe. Lost his life. And the soul of Agasura went up in the air, the mouth went open, Krishna went walking out of the mouth. And the soul of Agasura merged with the body of Krishna. Wow. Brahma saw the whole thing. He's good. What's the limit of Krishna's mystic power? I know. I'll test my mystic power against Krishna's mystic power, and we'll see what's the limit of... Well, so Krishna shows him. Not what the limit is, but enough to just boggle Lord Brahma's mind. But it was Durachara. It was very bad. Take the coward boys and stick them in a cave and put a big stone in front of the cave. And cows. Put a big stone in front of the cave. Come back and see what Krishna's going to do. That's bad. But very quickly Krishna corrected that situation. Kipram Bhavati Paramatma. So, Ananya Bhak, that's towards the end of the ninth chapter, is also in the earlier part of the ninth chapter. This Ananyas Chintayantoma, this is undividedly fixing the mind or fixing your consciousness upon the Supreme. Prabhupada translated as having the mind fixed upon the form of the Lord. It's not only the gopis were attached to Krishna in such a way that one moment seemed like 12 years or more. That's Ananya Bhakti. It's also described the coward boys. Because sometimes when they were going through the forest and Krishna was passing on one side of the tree, and they were passing on the other side of the tree. Same tree. They couldn't see Krishna for just a moment. That moment was like 12 years or more until they saw Krishna on the other side of the tree. And that was Krishna's concern when the cowherd boys entered the mouth of the Agasura demon. Krishna became bewildered. Did you know that? Krishna became bewildered. Is it possible for Krishna to become bewildered? By his own internal potency. And what was the nature of that bewilderment? He was thinking, the coward boys can't live for a moment without seeing me. And if they enter into the mouth of the Agasura demon, they'll be so worried about me. They won't be able to think straight. They'll be so disturbed. So Krishna wanted to stop them, but in that moment of bewilderment, it was too late. They already entered into the Agasura's mouth. And then Krishna became unbewildered. Meaning, it was an action of Krishna's own internal potency for his pleasure. You've heard this Stumpa Swami question before, probably. Is God so great that he can create something so heavy he can't lift it? You've heard that one before? So, listen carefully. God is all power. If God is all powerful, can he create something that's so big he can't lift it? Because if you say he can't, then he's not all powerful. And if he can, then he's also not all-powerful because he created something so big he can't lift it. Called Stumpa Swami question. And the answer is, Prabhupada gave the question and gave the answer. He said, yes, he can make something that's so heavy and big he can't lift it, and then lift it. That is Krishna. So Krishna became bewildered for a moment, and then by his own internal potency, following his desire for that to happen, and then Krishna liberated, rescued the cowherd boys, and killed the Asura. So Krishna corrected Lord Brahma, and Brahma's wonderful prayers showed it. But that's Krishna from within the heart, correcting his own devotee. And that's what's being described here in this verse. One who achieves that state. Ananyas chintayantamam ye jana parya upasate. What is upasana? Or upasate. What does that mean? There are three divisions of the Vedas. Karmakanda, Jnanakanda, and Upasanakanda. What does Upasana mean? Worship. They're always engaged in worshiping me, their mind completely fixed in me. To such persons, so that's when Krishna sees someone has that qualification, he feels something. He's not a dull stone, or an icon, or like a Buddha statue or something. Krishna is a person, very loving and warm and affectionate. And when he sees those two qualifications within his devotee, Tesham, unto those persons, Nityadi Yuktanam, those who are perpetually engaged in that way, Yogakshema Bahamyam. I preserve what they have, and I carry what they lack. Which very much fits in with the discussion that we had the other evening. This was in Verbis. Prayasa, over endeavoring for worldly things. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur explained there's karma prayas, when you endeavor unnecessarily or excessively for something worldly. For a devotee, we don't need to do that. Our endeavor is bhakti prayasa. And that's just in the sadhana stage. And the ecstatic bhava-bhakti stage, or spontaneous devotional service, it just happens. We don't have to, like, try to control the mind or something like that. In sadhana we have to. But in the ecstatic stage, the mind just goes to Krishna. Like the gopis, they would, condemn their mind. Stop thinking of Krishna. He's bad. I don't want to think of him anymore. But they couldn't help but think of him because their minds were attached to him. For one who is attached to Krishna, they don't need to endeavor for things. Krishna's saying he takes care of it. He personally takes care of it. Not even through the agency of his energies. He personally takes care of it. And there's a wonderful story in this connection with a commentator of Bhagavad Gita. He had a very nice name for a Bhagavad Gita commentary. His name is Arjunanath. Have you heard this story before? Arjunanath was writing this commentary on Bhagavad Gita. And when he came to this verse, 9:22, it pained him to read the verse. It pained him because it hurt to think of the devotee accepting service from Krishna. Because the devotee doesn't want to accept service from Krishna. The devotee wants only to serve Krishna. But in the verse it says, Krishna comes and serves his devotee. Unto the devotee who ananyas chintayantamam ejanatayapasate, Krishna comes and serves his devotee. Whatever they have, he preserves. Whatever they lack, he provides. So his mind was too agitated. So he put down his writing instrument and went to do his midday duties. And his practice was, he would go take his bath. Meanwhile, his wife would finish the preparation for lunch, make the offering to the deity, and he would come back after lunch, after his duties, and sit down and have lunch. Only this day it happened differently. He went to do his midday duties, and very quickly he came back. And he didn't wait to take his lunch, he just went back to his writing table and completed writing. And then he told his wife, "Now I'm ready for lunch," and he took his lunch. And then he left. And then he came back with his hair wet, having just bathed, and he asked his wife, where's lunch? She said, "Wait a minute. You just came here and had lunch." "Oh, excuse me, I've got the story mixed up. Excuse me, I've got the story mixed up." We'll go back. He went to take his bath. Two young boys came to the door. One with a very fair complexion, another with a very blackish complexion. And said, "We brought these, your husband sent us to your door to give you these things. Please accept them. They're for lunch, to be prepared for his lunch today." And she said, "Oh, very beautiful young boys. Come and sit down and wait for my husband. He'll be back very shortly. I'm sure he'll be very happy to thank you for this nice gesture." And they said, "No, we're not going to wait till your husband comes back. He beat us." "My husband beat you?" This is because he had scratched over the words in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, "Yoga Kshema Vahamyam." It hurt him to see those words. "He beat us." "My husband beat me? He's a Brahmin. He would never hurt anybody. I know my husband thoroughly. He would never do such a thing." "Oh yes. Look at our back." And they lifted their shirts and they showed these marks on their back. "We're leaving right now before he gets back." So they left. And the husband came and he had his lunch and said, "Oh, this amazing vegetables. Where'd you get these vegetables?" The two boys came to the door and they said that you sent them to bring them here. And they said that you beat them. Me to know, yes, I personally Carry what you lack and preserve what you have. He was crying, wept, in ecstatic love for Krishna. Because it's when one is engaged in the internal potency of Krishna, it's direct. When one is engaged in the external potency of Krishna, it's very indirect. It's still through the agency of Krishna's external energy, but Krishna doesn't have any direct contact even with his external energy. What to speak of the conditioned souls? Krishna never contacts or is contaminated by contact with the illusory energy. But by his will, maya yakshina prakriti suyate satcharacharam, by his will, his material energy is moving by his sanction. By the sanction of his, the portion of his plenary portion, the paramatma feature of the Lord, material energy is moving. But when one is engaged in ananya bhakti, the internal energy of Krishna takes over, and Krishna directly interacts with his devotees. And this is one of the most, it's a very confidential verse. It's in the most confidential knowledge chapter. But when Krishna sees the quality of genuine devotion within the heart of his devotee, he directly accepts that service and directly interacts with them in very personal ways. It's far beyond impersonal monism or even meditation upon super soul. Krishna is directly, personally, in his Bhagavan teacher, directly acting with his devotee. We may not visualize or tangibly see the form of Krishna. Nonetheless, it's Krishna directly acting in our lives as we approach that stage of devotional service. Krishna is saying this in contrast with, from the previous verse, those who are seeking heavenly pleasures by worshipping of the demigods, and they go to that place and they stay there for a long duration of time and join in, fall down again to the earthly realm and continue in their fruitive activities. But there are others that don't approach life in that way, rather in this way. So it's a contrast. One of the ways of teaching, I learned this from Bhori Chan's book, The Art of Teaching. There, one of the ways of teaching something is compare and contrast. It's like this and it's not like that. Something that you know or something that you don't know, and it's like something you know, but it's also unlike something that you know. Gives you an idea of what that something is. So that's what Krishna is. He's using the compare and contrast. He's teaching what pure devotion is to contrast it, he says, what pure devotional service isn't. When one worships the many, Bahuda Vishvato Mukham. It's a type of devotion, but it doesn't lead to the same personal reciprocation. So, similarly for us, we're on the path, if we follow the teachings of Rupa Goswami carefully, this was supposed to be class about part of the teachings of Rupa Goswami. If we follow the teachings of Rupa Goswami very carefully, it will take us to this ananya bhakti position, ananya chintayantoma. It's meant to do that. I gave the example in Burmese that you probably do the same thing that we do everywhere else in this time. We have little invitation cards when we go on Harinam, we invite people. You do that? So, we hand out people an invitation card to come to the temple. Rupa Goswami is not just, you know, for people who come to the temple, he's handing out an invitation card to go to the local Vrindavan. And we just have to take that invitation card and go. And, you know, say yes, and, you know, get on your bhakti mobile and go there. And make sure your bhakti mobile has fuel in the tank. And that's this, you know, striving for undivided devotion. Where there isn't some other shelter, there isn't something else that we're expecting. Just devotional service. Just devotional service. Prahlad Maharaj, I'll end with this. A very nice verse from the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, where Prahlad Maharaj is anticipating Lord Nrisimhadeva is going to ask him to take a benediction because you please me very much. So please just ask for anything that you like. And Prahlad Maharaj says, don't ask me to ask for anything I like, because there isn't anything else I like. There is nothing else in our relationship, but I'm the servant and you're the master. And there isn't anything else. So you tell me what you like, and that's what I like. That's devotional service. When Pradyumna, the son of Krishna, would want to do something, but Krishna didn't want that something, immediately he would give it up. And when Krishna didn't want something, no, the other way around, when Krishna wanted something, but he was previously thinking he didn't want that something, immediately he wanted that something. Rupa Goswami uses that as an example to show that's what service is. Because the son unto the father is a relationship of service, very clearly. The child to the parent is service. Parents are serving the children too, but in parental affection. And the children are serving the parents in dasya rasa. Servitorship of a superior. And devotional service begins from that position. Lord Chaitanya's teachings begin from that position. We take the position constitutionally of servant. Rasas can expand from that, but the foundation point is service. So whatever it is that Krishna wants us to think of Him. So we think of Him. It's a nice subject to think of, Krishna. Or a nice object to think of. Because he's so loving. He's bhaktavatsala. He has so much affection for his devotee that the devotee doesn't have to think about anything. Does a child have to think, Daddy, can you feed me tonight? Mommy, can I have something to eat? They're thinking. The child doesn't have to ask those things. The parents are thinking those things. It's cold out. Can I have a sweater? They've got, you know, five sweaters lined up ready to give to the child because it's cold out. That's natural affection. So a devotee doesn't have to karma prayasa, doesn't have to go out of their way to come up with something so they can be an enjoyer of something. If we need something, Krishna will take care of it. Whatever we have, Krishna will preserve it. Our attention just needs to go to one thing, serving Krishna nicely, as best we can, at one thing. And that's everything. Within that one thing, it's everything. Very nice verse from Bhagavad Gita. Okay. Any comments or questions or discussion?
Thank you. where you don't see it happening in a material sense, where you don't see that I'm still struggling and like this, you begin to question or some doubt arise in our mind. What we should say.
Well, you've got you present you threw two things at once. One is the immature position of someone who thinks, oh, I'll just become, la la land, I'll just become a devotee, Krishna is going to take care of everything. See? Krishna take care of everything. We do our service unto Krishna. Service is our department, and results is Krishna's department. We don't make Krishna do all the service. We do the service. But we do the service, and whatever it is that we require, Krishna will take care of. We very conscientiously, so addressing the first one, we shouldn't be immature and neglect our service, thinking Krishna's going to take care of me. I'll just put my thumb in my mouth and pretend like I'm a baby. Take care of me. We do our service, and we're depending that on the fact that Krishna will take care of whatever it is that I require. Give me the intelligence, the ability, the strength, the determination, whatever it is to carry out my service. That's the answer to the first one. Now, the second one is, supposing things don't seem to be going so well. Then what do we do? Depends on how strong your determination is. Let's take the example of Srila Prabhupada. When he came to America at enormous risk and nothing happened. Nothing happened. For a whole year, nothing happened. In Nilamrita, it's described that Prabhupada would regularly go to the boat dock and check when's the next boat leaving back for India. He had to extend his visa because he came on a tourist visa. So he would go to the tourist office, the American embassy, and arrange for extending his visa. So he made practical arrangements, but it seemed like nothing was happening. So on one hand, or in one sense, Krishna was neglecting him. Krishna wasn't taking care of what he needed, apparently. But on the other hand, Prabhupada said, even if nobody came, I was feeling fully satisfied in carrying out the instructions of my spiritual master. So what's the standard of satisfaction? The standard of satisfaction is serving the spiritual master. Knowing what his order is, it was very clear what his order was, and acting according to his order, putting everything at risk for that, he was fully satisfied. And sometimes, and certainly in this case, what Krishna was showing was the extent of the determination of his pure devotee. And in our case, it may help us understand when some result does come, where it's coming from. Because otherwise we might think, it's my endeavor, it's my expert way of arranging things. Now we've got a good result. That's illusion. It's the mercy of Krishna that brings the proper result. So we find ourselves in a situation where we're pinched. Necessities aren't being supplied, or at least what we think our necessities are not being supplied. We can do a refresh on what's really necessity, or how fixed am I in the order of the spiritual master versus how much am I attached to the result. Something, a very nice lesson. Book distribution teaches many, many, many nice lessons. let your father listen to the answer to the question. Hold on. When the book distributor becomes attached to getting a result, Krishna holds back the results. When the book distributor is simply trying to be an instrument for Krishna's mercy, results come very easily, and it's like instantaneous. It's a nice realization. When one gets all tense and anticipating, oh, today is going to be a big day, I'm going to distribute so many books today, acting and thinking through false ego, it's a wall. It's a wall of no, 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 or no, abuse. And when you let go of that false ego thing and just, I'm here to be an instrument of Krishna, all kinds of different things start to happen. It's a very nice lesson for life, not just book distribution. How much am I attached to the fruits of my endeavoring in serving Krishna? Versus how much am I attached to simply trying to serve Krishna? That's the ability and intelligence that Krishna gives me. So one can do a check on that one if one finds oneself in a situation like that. It's about our relationship with Krishna. And the relationship is the consciousness that we carry as we're serving, not just the act itself, the consciousness behind the activity. That's our relationship with Krishna. The help. Yeah.
Hi, Krishna. It seems to me that I'm sure Prabhupada spoke about that. I'm just debating my mind at what stage Krishna really protects, or you know, he brings what you lack and protect whatever you lack. Because it seems to me from Prabhupada's purport is like one who engaged in the nine process of devotional service, which means the ultimate level of Atmanivedana, that protection and bringing will come, or it will be there from the beginning.
Well, the answer is proportionate. Proportionate to one's surrender, that is the experience. It was saying it the other way. Proportionate to our desire to maintain some independence from Krishna, Krishna doesn't interfere. Now go the other way. Proportionate to our placing ourselves fully in the shelter of Krishna, Krishna's full protection is there.
I have a second follow-up question to that. I'm thinking that if in our state right now we may be thinking, well, what is it that Krishna brings? Because there's one voice in Srimad Bhagavatam where Krishna said that when the Lord especially favors someone, he takes away. And here he's saying he brings. So what is it?
Well, what he brings us is he brings us to him. You know, whatever it is that we require to serve him, he brings. The operative principle is it's on his terms, not ours. Alright? That says it all. We may think we need something to serve him, and Krishna has a different idea. Just like, you know, my computer won't start, so. Okay. Serve him in a different way. Mahaprasadam from somewhere. I don't even know where. And I'm supposed to give it out. I mean, I asked for someone to provide.